Good evening. This is the October 15th, 2006 Elections Committee of the Pacifica National Board meeting. And I believe we have quorum. This is Carolyn Burton, Chair. Mary, would you like to call the roll?
Yes. Mary Berg, present. Mm-hmm. Carolyn Burton,
present.
Jane Gatewood. Terry Goodman.
Here.
Patty Heffley.
Here.
Melinda Eiley-Dome. Richard Phelps. Serene Roberts.
Present.
Deb Shafto. Zarina Shakir. Harrison Weil. Harrison Weil, did somebody just come on?
No, I forgot to call him. I'm wondering if maybe John can. I'll try on myself.
Ted Weisgall.
Hello.
Don White. LaVarne Williams.
Present.
Carol Wolf.
Here.
And then we have Les Radke. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
Art Sasny.
Yep.
Is Jack here or anybody else? That's it? Of our advisors? Okay.
Very good. All right. Does everyone receive a copy of the agenda?
Yep.
Good. Then we have the approval. I have a motion that I wanted to add to the agenda, actually as a special order. After the report from the National Supervisor, and I just sent it out, so if everyone doesn't have it, perhaps I should read it. Does anyone else have any other additions or corrections or changes to the agenda?
This is Serene. I don't have internet access, so I haven't seen the agenda, and also people listening to the stream obviously haven't seen it, so I think it would be a good idea if you could read it.
I will read the entire agenda, yes, but that's a bit lengthy. Any other comments or suggestions? Next scheduled meeting date and approval of minutes. There are times attached to each of these.
Don't we want to go back to the approval of the agenda?
Before it's read, you mean?
Maybe
you're right. Uh-huh. Yeah, I think so. Maybe we need to just approve it and then we'll read it as approved. Thank you. Let me read this motion then that I want to include in the agenda.
Under new business, would
under,
that be?
No, I wanted to make it a special order.
Oh, a special
following
order.
Following the report and before the reports from the work groups. Following the reports from the National Supervisor and before the reports from the work groups. If I may read it. This is a motion, the correction of WBAI list for duplicates and non-members. Whereas the WBAI member list has never been audited for improperly included recipients of gift donations labeled as members, and whereas the WBI member list has never been corrected for duplicate entries, therefore it is resolved.
Melinda Eiley Dome, KPFT.
Hi, Melinda. Therefore it is resolved that the National Election Supervisor shall take steps to effectively audit the WBAI member list using pledge cards in the electronic database to, in the words of the PNB, quote, verify member database accuracy and compliance with the bylaws to ensure that the membership rolls meet the requirements of the bylaws. And it is further resolved that the ballots counted shall reflect the results of this verified membership database. That is the motion I would like to add. Are there any objections to adding that as a special order?
This is Serena. I have an objection.
Yes. Go ahead, Serena.
I don't think it should be added as a special order. I don't understand why, when there have been no audits throughout the system, WBAI is particularly the subject of this motion. And there is, in fact, I think maybe from the last agenda, something about doing audits at all the stations. So I don't understand the special focus. But certainly, as I requested earlier, in order to know whether or not this should be placed above anything else on the agenda, I still need to know what's on the agenda.
Well, sorry that I sent out the agenda the other day with a request that people who didn't have it in front of them at the meeting have someone read it to them off-list. Is there anyone who could read it to you off-list rather than
Well, I'm on the call presently, so are you suggesting two people should get off the call? One, so they can read it to me, and rather than simply read the list, read the agenda as you presented it, so that those listening also have access to that?
Well, we are going to read it, but I thought we would, as Mary suggested, that we would do that after we made any changes to it, so that the agenda as read would reflect what we had changed. But anyway, we have for us this motion to add or not BAI. Yes, Terry?
I'd suggest that we add the new item at the end of the agenda in its normal place rather than as a special order until the agenda is read, at which point we could consider moving it.
All right. My only problem with that is that we might not get to it if it were later, but if we can do it earlier, that's fine. There's a time question here because the ballots are scheduled to go out tomorrow. That's the only reason.
I've got one quick question,
I'm sorry,
if I can.
Is this Melinda?
I'm so sorry. This is Melinda.
Yes, Melinda.
Is Les going to be on the program?
I'm here.
Les, I've got a message for you.
Yes.
We just had a problem in our station that has arisen, and I was asked by my local election supervisor to notify you to let you know she needs to speak with you as soon as possible.
Does this have to do with the communist remark?
No, it has to do with an incident which happened in our station right before they went on the air.
Oh, okay.
All right, thank you for the message.
Because I've already ruled on the communist remark.
Totally different.
Okay.
All right, thank you. If we can move on.
Mary Berg here.
Yes, Mary. Mm-hmm.
Why don't I just read through the agenda fairly fast, and then people in the audience as well will know what it is, and then we don't have to do any hoopla.
All right, go ahead, Mary.
So, approval of agenda. Next scheduled meeting date, Sunday, November 17th at 8 p.m. Eastern. Approval of minutes. Report and Q&A from National Elections Supervisor Les Radke. Got an hour for that. Reports from work groups, 30 minutes for that. Public Elections Committee email list. And Terry had given notice of a motion to rescind the motion that was passed July 16th. So that, you might have gotten that before. Terry is going to be moving that the secretary and himself be moderators of the Google list.
Not exactly.
Oh, no, the substitute motion is to multiple Pacific lists. That the
secretary be an owner and moderator.
To inform members of what moderators can do. Resolve that the committee secretary shall be owner and moderator of the committee's internet list serves. Then there, the next item, Subcommittee on Promoting Member Participation in Delegate Elections. And that's regarding a motion passed in July that the election committee recommends that the local election supervisors hold open meetings, keep minutes, including attendance and decisions, and post them where they can be accessed publicly. New business, resolution of advice regarding the adjustment of election timelines. That's Terry Goodman. And I'll just go to the resolution without the whereases. The resolution that's proposed is that the PNB Elections Committee recommends to the PNB Governance Committee that any proposed amendment that may require membership approval, such as one shortening the delegate candidate nomination period, be offered separately from any proposed amendment adjusting the overall election timeline. Then there's a motion from Carolyn Burden, address correction of the membership list. Again, I'll skip the whereases and read the resolution. That the National Elections Supervisor takes steps to include an official request for an address correction for all ballots mailed from stations which have failed to comply with this directive for an official address correction, and further resolve that only ballots validated from results of mailing so corrected will be counted. And there is an appendix just for referral about prior motions passed.
Okay.
Point of information.
Yes, Ted.
Is there any way that we can identify those issues that are before us that really have to be dealt with because they impact or have some relationship to the upcoming elections, and those things that are on this agenda that can either come at the end or even be carried over to a subsequent meeting that are not of a timely nature? I can't really identify what is and what is not, although I thought that moderator thing that we just talked about a moment ago is something that doesn't really have the immediacy of some others. At least that's my first impression.
Yes, I think that we could do that if you want to amend the agenda in some way to move things around. I would like to amend the agenda to add the motion that I read earlier to be a special order.
Well, we still haven't gotten all the way through it, but if that, if my perception is correct, and from here on out as the agenda is being read, if somebody can, the maker of the motion can identify whether it's time sensitive or not, I think that'll help us to prioritize our thing, our work tonight.
My motions are not time sensitive for this meeting.
Are we now approaching new business and the agenda items there is, or is that it? Just the one? I thought we had it. Okay, the address correction, is that it?
There are two that are not time sensitive and two that are, so far as I can tell.
Have we read all of them? I thought I saw more.
Yes, I read everything. There's just an appendix for of prior motions passed, just for information, but that was the agenda.
Yeah.
And then
no, I'm not
is.
Sure of the protocol here. Do we need to approve this and then amend it?
I'm concerned about the two-thirds vote to change the agenda once we approve it. I think when Les gives his report, we may be hearing of some issues that need to be addressed in the form of additions to the agenda. And I would hope that we would have the flexibility to do that tonight.
Well, I think that if we need to do that, I think two-thirds would not be the big question. I would like to amend the agenda at the moment to put the motion for the correction of the BAI list.
But by the way, Carolyn,
yes.
Carolyn, I think you should make it clear what you're asking for is that the committee, the National Election Committee, has the ability to change the bylaws by itself. No, that's what you're asking, because the mailing list, everything has been printed. So you're asking not to have it go out October 16th.
I'm asking to have it done when it comes back. If there are PIN numbers, it can certainly be done that way. The other motion would need to be questioned, but let's not argue the motion.
There's a point of information, I hear.
Yes, Serena.
The address correction, isn't that something that has to be address correction requested printed on the envelopes for the Postal Service when it goes out? Is that how that works?
The envelopes come back. In other words, if they're sent out to the address, they will be returned.
Mm-hmm. If you have printed on it address correction requested, because I've seen that on mail that I've gotten.
Mm-hmm. I see what you're saying.
I mean, there's a special procedure. I don't know the details of it. That's what I'm trying to find out. What are the special procedures associated with having that on the envelope? And is there an additional fee for that, which I thought there was?
Oh, I see that the post office does it.
Yes, there is a fee, and it does have to be printed on the envelope. You have to pay for the service.
Okay, so can we print it in time for tomorrow?
Everything is printed. Everything is stuffed. It's waiting in bundles to go out.
So that's kind of moot, isn't it?
It doesn't strike me as being time sensitive for this election.
Well, it raises another issue then.
I have a point of information on that.
Yes,
does anyone? I had understood that first class mail does get returned to sender if it's not deliverable.
That's my understanding as well. This is not
bulk.
This
you put
is
that
class.
Request on when you have bulk mail or some other kind of mail, and then it may or may not get sent back.
I have a point of information.
Excuse me. Point of information on this, Mary. Are you saying that it's the same service for first-class mail as for the one you pay for bulk mailing?
That was my understanding.
I see.
That's part and parcel of first-class mail.
I see. All right.
Okay. And I have a point of information as well.
Yes.
My question is this. What if, because, of course, the ballots are going out as of now, what would be the protocol if, let's say, hypothetically, if a person should resign as a candidate and their name was still on the ballot?
Oh, there's no problem if at this point, because this has gone on, I now have a... I've put this out to at least the PNB and the local election supervisors. To withdraw, you sign an affidavit which removes you totally from a cycle. We're not going to go back and forth on this anymore. Once that's done, at the time of the election, there is a simple line that's inserted in the data file saying that that person is removed. That person's votes then will be transferred to all of the other votes that were made for the person.
What about the opposite? What if it was
point of order?
What if
the person was eliminated? Melinda, I'm going to ask if you could hold that question until we get to the Q&A period, because right now we haven't approved the agenda yet. Do you think we could wait on that one?
Point of information?
Yes. Yes, Serene, go ahead, please.
I understand that there were two motions under new business, one with regard to the election timeline, which Terry has said is not time sensitive, and the address correction motion, correct? He's also heard someone say there were four motions. So did I miss something in Mary's reading?
Yes, Mary, go ahead.
Yes, there are two motions under new business. One was Terry Goodman's resolution of advice regarding the adjustment of election timeline.
Actually, I'll rescind my mention of that being time sensitive. I don't know, because I don't know what work the governance committee is doing. We should try to give them
advice
before
they complete
the work.
I think that may be time sensitive. My understanding is people are working on this, and so that was one motion.
Yeah, I'm happy to share that Terry's motion. I assume he sent it to the list. I'll forward it to them. Although it hasn't been voted on yet by this committee, we actually have a joint listserv, by the way, with
great
members of the governance committee.
Okay.
But anyway.
Yeah. Anyway, that's
Don
right.
White.
Hi, Don.
Hello, folks. So sorry, I kept trying to get in, and I was told I had the wrong code and number or something, so I'm late. I apologize.
Oh, I'm glad you're here. Mary was just, we're still approving the agenda.
And there were the two motions. That was the one, and then the address
correction.
The address
correction and the correction targeted at DAI.
Those are the two.
With regard to the address correction motion, it seems to me that that is moot, because those ballots have already gone out. Obviously, anything that's returned by the post office is not a ballot that someone's going to be using to vote, because it'll be in an office somewhere in Berkeley. And with regard to the DAI list, my understanding is that any membership department can run the deduping, and I'm assuming that that was done, to eliminate things where someone might have, both Christy and Christine, that sort of thing. To catch those sorts of things. And I'm assuming that the local election supervisors also worked on that. That process aside, I'm unaware of any audits having taken place at any of the other stations, so I don't understand the specific focus on WBAI.
Madam Chair, can I?
Yes, please.
I believe all that should come in the discussion of
these
motions,
and
in view of the concern about the two-thirds majority, mm-hmm. Is it possible under Roberts to have, as a special order of the day, that this agenda can be amended with a simple majority? If so, I would like to move that we adopt the agenda, which then can be amended by a simple majority.
I would object to that, because I'm not too sure that we can do that, move to change to adopt by a simple majority.
Point of order.
Yes.
If I can offer an opinion on this, if we don't approve the agenda, then it automatically becomes the case that we can amend it by a simple majority. Approving the agenda means setting it in stone and establishing the two-thirds requirement for amending it.
Are you saying that we cannot vote to do that by a simple majority, even if we want to?
I'm saying that it's redundant. If we vote no on approving the agenda, then the agenda that has been established is the agenda, and it automatically can be amended by a majority vote.
I see.
That's why I'm going to vote no on approving the agenda.
I see. All right. Do we need to? Yes, Terry.
Ted is essentially correct. If the agenda is not approved, it serves as a general guideline for the meeting that may be changed by majority vote.
Mm-hmm. All right.
What's the difference between what I said and you? I don't like that idea that what I just said is essentially correct. It's what I said was what you said. It is correct.
I think that Terry was reinforcing exactly what you said, Ted. Are there any objections to moving ahead then with the agenda as it stands and then
no.
trying to approve it? All right, hearing no objections, let us proceed. The next item is the next scheduled meeting date. And because some of these issues that are coming up, not the meeting date, but following that, are do concern WBAI, I would like the indulgence of the committee to allow someone else to surrender the chair, actually, to Terry Goodman. Is there any objections to my doing that?
No.
It would be easier for me to discuss things. I thank you very much.
Yes, actually, I do object. As the chair of a committee chair has total freedom to participate as a member, and you don't have to surrender the chair like you would if you were a board chair. You can speak as much as necessary. And in fact, Robert says you're expected to speak more than most people. I don't think you have to surrender the chair to do it.
Well, John, I agree with that, Ted, my feeling is that it would be there's an appearance even of using the chair improperly,
right.
and I would feel much more comfortable speaking if I were not acting as the chair. Yes, Don, and then Mary?
Okay. I withdraw my complaint.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I think the point is moot now because I was going to say that we should, I think, respect the wishes of the chair. If she prefers to relinquish so that she's not in the dual role of advocating and also chairing, I would have no objection to her relinquishing the chair. I think Terry is a good choice.
All right. Thank you very much. Terry, all yours.
Okay. Thank you. At this point, in order to speed the meeting later on when it comes up, in the chair's role of assisting members in presenting resolutions, I want to give advance warning that if the motion on address corrections of the membership list is presented in its current text form, I will rule that motion out of order because the final sentence of that motion impinges upon areas that are assigned to the election supervisor and are not revocable under the bylaws. If that motion is presented first without the final sentence, then it will get on the table for consideration and the final sentence can be added as a proposed amendment and ruled separately. So that will give the maker time to consider her strategy.
Point of information, Mr. Chair.
Yes.
When you say the final sentence, you're talking about the duplicates and non-members motion. Is that correct?
No. Address correction of the membership list.
Okay, that one. Okay.
That one.
And the final sentence then is that the second resolved.
Yeah,
that only ballots
validated
results
from
mailing
results
so correct.
So,
okay, you would rule it out of order unless that were stricken. Okay.
I would like to appeal the ruling of the chair on that.
The ruling
hasn't happened yet.
The ruling will occur when the item is, when the agenda item is reached.
Mm-hmm.
And so members can consider their appeals during this entire meeting until the agenda item is reached.
Mr. Chair.
All right.
Mr. Chair.
Ted.
This is Ted. I would like to suggest that right now we consider those two resolved as divided motions so that we could approve the first and reject the second. And you could even rule the second out of order, but the two resolves don't have to be hooked together.
Yeah, that we can do when the agenda item comes up, depending on how the motion is presented.
Right.
So right now we should proceed with the agenda.
Right.
Point of parliamentary procedure or something.
Okay. Members recognized for something.
Thanks. I meant to ask for an excuse absence for Zarina Shakur, who is out of town, or that is to stay away from home. whereas out of town, when we're all on a call, right, who's away from home and engaged in the Ramadan festivity celebration.
Sure.
So she's not on the call tonight.
Okay. Chair will recognize a motion to excuse the absence of Serena Shakir. Is there any objection to that motion? Hearing no objection, Serena is excused from this meeting.
Okay. Thank you.
Continuing with the agenda, are there any minutes? Oh, it's next scheduled meeting date, Sunday, November 17th, 2006 at 8 p.m. Eastern Time.
Correction. I think it's supposed to be November 19th.
November what?
November 19th. November 17th is a Friday. So
oh, that is correct,
right.
Yes.
Oh,
thank you.
Okay.
19th.
It'll be after the election.
Is there any objection to November 19th, 2000?
It's after the election.
Is that an objection?
Would this be within this, in other words, if we're former members, we can still attend?
Why not?
Yes.
Yes. It's not until new members are seated, and this is a national committee,
right.
That's not going to happen until after the board meets in January.
Right.
Okay. Just curious.
Okay.
Any further objection to Sunday,
None.
November 19th? Without objection, then Sunday, November 19th, 2006 at 8 p.m. Eastern Time will be the next regular meeting of the PNB Elections Committee. Are there any minutes to approve?
Mr. Chair, no, I have draft minutes, but I don't want to send them out until I have gone over them. I simply compiled them and never went back to recheck them, so I would rather not present them at this time.
Would you like to be pressured into giving us a date?
They will go out within the next 2 weeks, somehow, roughly at least 2 weeks before the next meeting.
Thank you very much. We're now on the agenda item report and Q&A from the National Election Supervisor. So the chair will recognize Mr. Lester Radke. This agenda item is scheduled for 60 minutes maximum.
Good. First thing is that I think that there should be some revisiting of the powers and the relationships between governance bodies and the National Election Supervisor, the National Election Committee. As it now stands, I make these determinations. You can make recommendations. That's basically what the bylaws say. I just want to remind folks of that. I'm not sure that the approach that we have right now where I'm responsible for making all these decisions, I think that has some drawbacks to it. Essentially, what I've done is we have regular meetings with me and the local election supervisors, and we're making joint decisions as much as possible. But ultimately, I can make these decisions, and there's really no check on it other than moral suasion. And it seems to me that goes on throughout this outfit. I want to go through a number of very quick things. I've been prioritizing trying to stay with the bylaws. Meanwhile, at every station, there are problems that range from semi-serious to serious that I'm trying to deal with the local election supervisors, and I'm behind. There's no question about it, and I am not doing a good job of that. But one thing that is true is for the first time, we are getting the mailings out on time for four stations, the WBAI, KPFA, KPFK, and KPFT. The ballots hopefully are correct, and the candidate statements have been proofed, and the mailing lists are a mess. That's not just true at WBAI. I think Serene mentioned that. It's true at all the stations. I have huge gaps. I finally got an unpaid staff list Friday, just before it was being printed, and I got lists from every station last week, even though we were printing up the stuff, people asking me to change this, that this list actually was not correct. Local election supervisors going and looking at this. And I do want to remind folks that if you look at the job of the local election supervisor and the national election supervisor, you may be surprised to find that mailing lists aren't mentioned there. It's assumed that the general manager and that the station will keep track of these things and will do this stuff. But because it's not done, it said, well, Nobody else is doing it. It should be the role of the National Election Supervisor. There are some things in the bylaws, I want to remind folks, that have never been done, even though they're in the bylaws. Here's one example. It states in the bylaws that if a person is
Richard.
A member of more than one station, that person will only have a vote of the station that they say they should have a vote for. To do that means we combine the 90,000 mailing list and go through looking for duplicates, but we have to do it name by name simply because the names that come in have slightly different addresses, slightly different first names, slightly different, and then we have to call up those people in that 90,000 list. The way the past National Election Supervisors have dealt with this is they've ignored it and not mentioned it in the report. I now find that out. We need to go through these bylaws, and if people can demand anything, but if you demand things and there's no... And it's very, very difficult to fulfill what's in those demands in a couple of weeks. It's not going to be done. It's going to be skated over. So there's a lot of stuff with this process that I found that really should be re-looked at. Hopefully this is the last time we have an election during this time period and with the time constraints that are put on it, because every National Election Supervisor has said the same thing. That is that you cannot have this little window between September 25th and October 5th where all the lists have to be vetted, all the candidate statements have to be read, the booklets have to be put together, the graphics have to be done, the ballots have to be checked out. You have 2 weeks to do that. Otherwise, the mailing doesn't get out because the mailing house itself has to print the stuff. In any case, that's been occupying me for the last 2 weeks, about 7 days a week, and then I come out of my shell. But we will get at least four stations out. Let me go over some other quick things because I'd rather just do the question and answer. One station was WPFW. At September 25th, they had one listener candidate and one staff candidate for the election. As some of you know, I rule that with one candidate for the election, not for 9 seats, but in WPFW, I believe it was 12 seats, there is no possibility of quorum, and therefore extended the entire election 2 weeks using that provision of the bylaws. Actually, the local station board voted 5-4 with one abstention, which is not even a majority quorum, to overturn my decision, which, of course, they can't do. And we went ahead and extended the election, and at this point, there are, in fact, sufficient candidates, both for the 15 candidates for listeners, and I believe it's four candidates or five candidates for the staff. And that election will be 2 weeks after all the other elections. The whole thing was extended for 2 weeks. Some of the other problems that I've tried dealing with are things such as the unfair campaign. Basically, the question has become a little bit more grayish to me, at least, in terms of what constitutes an unfair campaign activity. There is the question of free speech, which we brought up over and over again from the first election on. People have mentioned names and made unfair.
What is that background noise?
People are vacuuming up.
What is the mute for this? Pound, pound one?
Pound, pound one. And unmute is the same. It's a toggle.
Should I continue?
Yes.
Yes, please.
Okay. There are people on the staff who are holding events off the station, and anything which does not require station resources at all. Now, that's directly or indirectly. So, for example, if you have something happening off station that indirectly uses the station resource, that would not be in compliance with the Fair Campaign Pledge. But there are many things that are happening. The most recent one that I know of is at KPFT, where particularly when staff members make comments about candidates, those staff members have to be removed from the air. That's pretty clear. But there are a lot of gray areas that are coming up that I am the, you know, dealing with free speech, what you can say in a statement, et cetera. And for the purposes of future national election supervisors, I think there should be some discussion of that, and we should have some very, very clear guidelines, not precipitous guidelines, but very, very clear guidelines. So I've looked at it as if there is, in fact, libel, it is in opposition to the Fair Campaign Pledge, because if it's libel, that's unfairly attacking a candidate. If it's not libel, pretty much I've let things go. If things happen off the station, not using station resources, I've pretty much let it go. But anything that involves the station, there certainly has to be some penalty, and there certainly has to be some way of rectifying that, and often it's difficult. So in terms of where we're at, the four stations will have the mailings actually sent to the post office tomorrow, because it's first class, probably by the end of next week, by Saturday, most people will have received their ballots. And of course then there's the question of how valid are these mailing lists, and how many calls will I get. Like last time, what I've done is we have a list of barcodes and a list of names, and if a person calls in and says they did not get their ballot, I'll remove their barcode and basically send them a new ballot. I'll replace the barcode that's on there with a new one. And then when that barcode is scanned in, it'll be seen as, the old barcode will be seen as invalid. So that method is still being used. And I think I'll stop right there and just go into questions.
Okay, should we set a stack for questions?
I'd be on the stack.
This is Ted.
It's Melinda.
Melinda was first?
Yeah.
Carolyn Ted, on the stack, please.
Then Ted. Then Carolyn. Anyone else?
Richard.
Oh, Richard.
LaVarn.
Don White on the stack.
Don. Anyone else?
Oh, gosh.
Serene would like to be on the stack.
Serene. I have Melinda, Ted, Carolyn, Richard, LaVarn, Don, and Serene. Anyone else for the stack?
Not at the moment yet.
Go ahead, Melinda.
Yes, I'd asked previously, and I apologize if I perhaps inappropriately asked the question I wanted to ask. But what I wanted to ask, you had covered the grounds for if a person says, okay, I'm not going to run. Conversely, however, in the fact that we're behavior around Pacifica in all the stations, what I want to ask is this. What if a person just behaved in such a contentious fashion that, you know, it was decided that they would be eliminated against their will as a candidate? What would we do if they were still on the ballot?
Well, if they're still on the ballot and they're eliminated, there's no problem. If they're eliminated and they're on the ballot, when we actually count the ballots, there's a little discard check that we put in there. It's actually in the program. And then the ballots for that person, you know, if people have ranked and they've ranked that person number one and others two, three, four, five, that person's first ballot would just be thrown out and it would go to the other parts of the ballot, and they would be redistributed. There's no problem with that.
So their number two choice would be their number one?
Pardon?
So their number two choice would be their number one?
Yeah, basically all the choices move up. That's exactly right. Their number two choice would be now number one.
Okay, thanks.
Ted?
The decision, I've got a bunch of questions.
I'm sorry, can I, as a point of procedure, just ask a quick question?
Good.
If I have a question about what Melinda just asked, I need to wait until I get on the stack to ask her?
Yes.
Okay.
And you are on the stack.
I have a series of questions that I'd like to ask you. The first one is, are the decisions you've made, are they ones that you can share with us tonight? And if we have more information that we think should be brought to your attention for the possibility of an amended decision on your part, mean, the hearings that apparently have gone forward are hearings that were done somewhat in a vacuum, it seems to me. And I'm wondering if we can cut things off at the pass before problems become what we had in one case here in Houston. It was a continuing breach that cost the foundation a great deal of time, and time in this instance is money. So I'm wondering if we can hear what decisions you've made and perhaps weigh in on some of them if we feel that your decision was based on less than full information.
Right. A couple of things. First of all the decisions I'm making, I do try to at least, you know, they're at least go to the local election supervisors. There's not decisions that they're making without me. Secondly, I did promise to put those on the bullet on the web page, and I haven't done that. The web page for the elections has been changed. You probably know that. I am working a little bit with Pete on this, and I have to work more with them because I had hoped that we'd be able to post for those stations like WDFW, which have been very, very lax in terms of advertising this. You know, it would be helpful if I had the time to do my own web page for WPFW and just have a link to it. And that's where the decision should be. And I'm still planning on doing that, particularly after I get the mailing out tomorrow. I'm still planning on doing that. But then particularly people are talking about various decisions at each station. And I know that each station has their particular problems. And yes, I have no problem in reversing a decision that I and the local election supervisor jointly have made. And I realize that neither one of us, neither the local election supervisor and I, always have the complete information. So as new information comes in, yes, I would certainly be open to changing a decision. Because the decision should be based on this. It should be based on this fair campaign pledge. In other words, that the station can't be used in any way to favor one candidate over another. Now, outside of the station, there's very little that the fair campaign pledge deals with. It's with station resources. So the first thing I do is I look, how are the station resources being used? And if the station resources are involved, at that point, we try making a decision. I don't know if that answers you. That may be too abstract.
Well,
but the answer to your question, if I got more information about the fact that station resources are being used in a certain way, yes, I would definitely listen to that information.
Okay. Well, I'd like to bring up a specific case in just a moment, but I want to make a few suggestions, and I hope you can write them down.
I am.
Okay. It seems to me that one of the things that needs to come out of all of this, and I don't think it exists right now, is a guidebook with do's and don'ts for election supervisors. One of the items in that guidebook would be recommendations on how to conduct the interviews that are being aired, at least here in Houston, the last two or three nights and a couple more. I think it's Friday, Saturday, tonight, Monday, and Tuesday. And one of the things that I think I have heard, and I would like you to listen to the archive of this, is oftentimes the interviewer, who happens to have been so far the election supervisor, saying when a person gives an answer, "Oh, that was a really good answer. I really like that," which strikes me as being an endorsement of that particular candidate, or other such things that strike me as being value judgments, which I think are supposed to be verboten in terms of the programmers, but it certainly should be something to be avoided by the person doing the interviews.
I agree with you. Absolutely. What Ted is saying is absolutely correct. That's not. I will. I can understand why that happens, but it's understanding something and agreeing with it is two different things. That has to be stopped.
Okay, the other
Ted,
point...
Before you continue, I'd like to ask all committee members, if possible, to avoid using the names of any candidates when they go into particular incidents. Maybe identify the incidents by their character. That way we could avoid the conference call being used to the advantage or disadvantage of any candidate. Go ahead.
Thank you.
Thank you for that point. One of the things that I would think that needs to be clarified in a guidebook would be the deadlines for turning in campaign materials, the petition, and so on. The date has been clear. The time has not been clear. Also, how candidates can obtain the assistance of the station for obtaining signatures. As one of those people who helped to write the bylaws and the mandate that you have to have 15 signatures to run as a listener-sponsored candidate, I've seen efforts made to make this extremely easy for candidates when I thought that the whole idea of getting signatures was to create some kind of a threshold that showed that there was not just every Tom, Dick, and Harry providing signatures, but that it showed a level of member support for those candidates. Also, the question of signatures via email, whether or not they are or are not legitimate, whether a person has to personally sign the petition or can obtain signatures via email. That's a gray area as far as I'm concerned. And one of the rules that I understand is that you cannot take advantage of the airwaves of Pacifica that are not available to other candidates. So if I call in a talk show during the campaign and I say my name and it's clear, or I just say my first name, I say I'm Joe, that's one thing, but if I have an unusual name, that's another. But my understanding is that you can call in a talk show during the campaign because that resource is available to everybody. So those are my thoughts on what some things that would belong in a guidebook. My question is on the issue of deadlines. If a local election supervisor posts signs all over the station saying that there was a particular time when the deadline for turning in the materials, the signatures, and the campaign material, and that specific time deadline was not met, and station resources were utilized to try to get assistance for any or all candidates to get signatures, but it only benefited one candidate, does that not strike you as being a violation of the resources being used for the benefit of one person as opposed to the resources being available to everyone? My understanding was that the deadline here in Houston was 5 p.m. on whatever the date was, and one candidate turned in their materials after that, and it was later determined for that one candidate only that the deadline was really midnight. My understanding is when the polls close at 7 p.m., if you show up at the voting booth or at the polls after 7 p.m., it's too late, and you're out of luck. And I would think that same standard would work for candidates trying to turn in their materials and to run for our boards.
I'd like to be on the stack.
Mary Berg.
I was there, and he wasn't, so I want on the stack.
Which member is that?
That
Melinda Alley Dunn.
Melinda, you're
Mary
on the
Berg
stack.
Also
after. Could I... Should
Mary
I respond to these, or should I just listen?
Stack.
I mean, it's up to you. I'm very happy to respond, and I already have.
Les has the floor.
First of all, you're right. That should be guidelines. But remember, this is not voting. This is turning in nomination papers. So, yes, I'm an election supervisor, and when I close the polls at 7 p.m., people can't vote. And in this particular election, if people have not gotten their ballots in by November 15th, they will not vote. Now we're talking about turning in candidate papers. What the bylaws state is that it states a date. I've done this as local election supervisor, and it was peculiar to me because different stations for the first election all turned in
all had different times. For the second election, they all had different times. And for the third election, they all had different times. And I put down 5 p.m. as an administrative thing that if in fact, for example, there were, you know, the person was sitting there and it turns out the papers were in, they could actually go home. And legally, at that point, because the paper said turn it in at 5 p.m., they could. I did tell each local election supervisor that they had the administrative right to continue this as long as no candidates are favored. And the fact is that on the air, it was basically said, no candidate was mentioned, basically said people could come in to get their nomination papers signed, and anybody could do that. Any candidate could do that. It seems to me that that's fair. I also helped write the bylaws, and I know we argued a lot about these nomination signatures. KPFA actually had two elections before the national elections. And the question is, are we trying to make it very, very tough? Are we trying to make it very easy? And what we decided is we're trying to make it such that if a candidate doesn't really know anybody, and if the candidate or the candidate is looked at as somebody that nobody really wants to run, they will have a hard time getting signatures. But other than that, we were trying to make it relatively easy for people to get signatures. There was a case of one candidate at one station who had a very, very difficult time getting signatures because people knew that candidate and refused to sign them. That's an indication of a person who, you know, falls out because of the process of trying to get signatures. But for most candidates, we're trying to say we're trying to be inclusive. We're trying to get lots of choices before people to vote because it is a proportional representation election. And as such, if the person has no popular support out there, they won't get elected anyway. We're trying to remove or minimize the thing about write-ins. So that, I don't know if that's my ruling on that, and that ruling won't change. It's been the ruling, actually, for the last two times. It's not that every station closed at the same time. Some stations stay open till midnight, as a matter of fact. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't for one candidate. It was just open for that long. The bylaws are not in objection to that. So I'm using the bylaws to rule on that. There are some other areas that Ted brought up, and I really, I mean, if you want me to go into them, I will, but if you don't, I will call you tomorrow because there's something that you said about the interviews that really bothers me, and I need to pursue that.
Let's remember also mentioned policy on call-ins by candidates.
Yes.
Call-ins on candidates. We've had a... My general feeling about it is during this, what should be done is what I told Tucker to do, for example, is to give every programmer a list of the candidates so that that candidate won't call in. What happens if a candidate's voice is known by
mm-hmm.
some people and they don't give their name?
Right.
The fact of the matter is, I've tried dealing with that. I mean, we've tried dealing with that the last two elections. I
don't understand why the liberality that you've been talking about before does not take force here. I mean, every person can get to a telephone,
right,
and call.
I feel uncomfortable with it, but that's generally how we've ruled, to be honest.
May we proceed with the sack?
It's different if the person gives their name. I am so-and-so. You know, and I'm calling about that particular issue. That is a clear violation. It's
why,
not a clear violation.
Why, if every caller
order,
can
Mr.
do
Chair.
The same thing?
Point of order, Mr. Chair.
Yeah. May we
I
move
think
on with
we,
this guy?
Can we please not have a dialogue between the one person who's already asked his question and the supervisor? So
Ted, I'm
going to
pursue this with you. You know, I'll call you tomorrow.
Thank you.
Carolyn is recognized.
Hi, sorry. Can you hear me? I was on mute.
Yes.
Oh, good. Thank you. I have a list of questions. Maybe I'll give them all at once, Les, and you can decide, you know, how to prioritize them. One of them has to do with something that you said about the list and that another member mentioned. There was a mandate that all of the lists should be deduped in each station by a first-class mailing
to eliminate duplications before July 31st. And my understanding is that that was not done at any of the stations that I know of. I'm very concerned about that, and I'm wondering, that's the thrust of some of the motions coming up, but can the National do such a list, and by the time the ballots are counted, you'll have a return from that list? If the National was doing a fundraiser, that would serve the same purpose. And I understand that in one station, the list was cleaned manually. Can that be done at all the other stations? That is one question. Can the deduping be done even now and then work with the returns and the barcodes? The second question has to do with the good old gift memberships, which are not memberships. We have, I think, an extraordinary number of them, if I understand correctly. WBAI never changed its pledge cards, even though I was told that they had. They've been using the same gift membership checkoff on the cards. And I even heard, I think, Amy Goodman mention a gift at one point on a call. So we don't have any idea, I understand, of how many at WBAI have gift memberships. And I don't think it's too late to do something about that. We could still look at pledge cards, again, manually. It's a clerical task. And I would like to have... to know if you think that's possible, and if not, why not, and if so, how soon can that be done? Third question is, you've already answered that, the publication of decisions on campaign violations, but do you have a time frame? Do you have some idea of when those will be up? Because we keep getting indirect reports of your decisions, but no direct reports in writing, either on email or on a website. Maybe you could put them out on email, on our list even, the Public Elections Committee list, until you get a website up. And then the next question, I think the last, was the timeliness of challenges. When people make challenges, I know you're working as fast as you can, and now that the ballots are ready to go, perhaps you'll have more time, but how long should it take before members get anxious that they're queries and complaints about campaign violations have not been answered? Okay, those are all my questions for now.
Okay. Pretty easy. Deduping. For those of us who've dealt with database management, this is both an easy and a not easy question. The easy answer is the printing house that I have does automatic deduping. But what that means is there's close to exact duplicates. It's not exact, but close to exact duplicates. In other words, if the last name and address are exactly the same, then it's seen as a dupe. It's actually printed out, and it's checked to see whether, in fact, you know, like it's Mr. on one list and not a Mr. on another, but everything else is the same. That and if they are exact dupes, they're thrown out. Now, at the stations, I was worried about this because I read the past reports. Some of this stuff people should read because I think that, you know, in terms of looking at the list from the different stations, that's in the long report, but it doesn't have information which is useful for Pacifica because I think it misses the problem. The problem is not spare names that are somehow entered. I'll give an example. At KPFA, which is the station where I was able to manage because I'm right next door to it, it also has the largest list. It has a list of 28,500 people. We were trying to figure out how to come out with a method which would allow people to go through and do this deduping. And I actually sent this to the local election supervisors, and at least at three stations they attempted to do this. And what it is a manual job. What we did here is we ground out everything that was close that was a duplicate. And then we had to call up those people. And the reason you had to call them up is because you'd have Rob and Robbie at the same address. It turns out that was a husband and wife. Or you don't know. In other words, you can't dedupe by simply assuming that because two people with similar names live at the same place, therefore, that's one ballot. Doesn't work that way. It's a fairly complicated thing. If there's two people living at a place and they contributed over $50, potentially you got two votes if they're two separate people. So we ended up calling. It was a fairly long process, of, and we reduced the list from 28,500 to 26,000. Those were simply duplicates. And by the time this was done and I sent this to the other places, there were, it turns out, other problems. So I have membership lists with names, how much they gave, and no address. Large numbers of these. And so I'm having a couple hundred extra ballots printed for each station just because of that. But I think this deduping thing should be looked at. It's not a, you know, I mean, everybody's looking for the magic arrow. You send it to a deduping place and they'll take care of it. It's not going to work that way. This is a manual job.